Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
This is Chalk Talk.
Black and yay! Black and yay! That hot!
Football season is here, and the football talk never stops on Penguin Radio. We'll take a look at the NFL by reviewing some of last week's biggest matchups and moments from around the league, while also getting you ready for next Sunday.
Rodgers gets the snap. Blitz is on. Rodgers scrambles.
He's
left. Winds up. Rainbow.
Bob.
He's got Cobb at the 10 to the 5.
Yes!
To the end zone. Touchdown.
We've got you covered on campus as well, as we will take a look at everything going on in the NCAA. From the rankings to some of last week's biggest upsets.
James, the lateral to the corner of the end zone. Can you believe that?
And now, radio.dominican.edu and Penguin Radio presents Chalk Talk. Here's your host, Jeff Safford. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Chalk Talk here on radio.dominican.edu. This is Jeff Safford coming to you live from Dominican University on another great Tuesday afternoon. It's a nice fall afternoon out there today, and I'm sure we have a lot more great fall weather to be looking forward to, as thank goodness it seems like this hot summer is finally giving up the ghost. And also, I'm sure it's great news for all of our firefighters fighting fires around California. I'm sure everybody's heard of the Valley Fire, and still want to send all of our thoughts and prayers out to everyone in Middleton and to all our firefighters as well. Give them a big thank you. All right, we got a nice show lined up for you this afternoon. We're going to be hitting on college football and the NFL, mostly, is what we're going to be focusing on this afternoon. We're going to start by talking about Week 3 and recapping some of the games. Obviously, last night, the matchup with the Packers and Chiefs on Monday night, and what we pulled from there. Some surprising 0-3 teams to talk about. Some cute quarterback injuries. A couple of trades going on in the NFL today involving the Bears. And also some Deflategate news, maybe, unfortunately, for those of you who are just uninterested in Deflategate. I am as well, but I have to hit on it. I mean, it is a big news story. And also an interesting story from Golden Tate and the Lions about pre-snap recognition. Kind of an interesting story, something you don't hear about all that often in the NFL, so we're going to be talking about that, and then we're going to take a break and talk about Week 4, what we feel will be the big matchups happening in Week 4, and then in the second half of the show, we'll be talking about college football, Week 4 recaps for the NCAA, the upsets, and the interesting matchups from the Pac-12 from last week, and Texas finding a way to lose again. Seems kind of odd. I mean, for them to lose the same way 2 weeks in a row. The Gators maybe trying to make themselves a major power in college football again. They hold on this week against Tennessee. Have a big one coming up next week against Ole Miss, and we'll head on that as well as we look ahead for Week 5 for the NCAA. So that is going to be our show this afternoon, and bear with us. We are dealing with some, I guess I shouldn't say issues. We are broadcasting Dominican soccer right now, live, if you're listening to this live. So when that ends, we'll be coming in with that as well. So anyway, week three, a couple of interesting matchups, definitely some interesting teams that started off going 0-3. Let's go ahead and start with them. The Ravens were unable to hold on at home against the Bengals. I picked them to win. I guess that one goes in the books as I missed it, even though that was a very, very good game. The Bengals and the Ravens, it was definitely back and forth. It looked to me, watching it live, that the Ravens were almost kind of destined to win. I mean, they had that crazy fumble return by, I think it was C.J. Mosley who picked it up and ran it back for the Ravens. Steve Smith Sr. had a very long receiving touchdown, kind of turning back the clock. You know, I heard Chris Berman call the stadium, M&T Bank Stadium, the big crab cake. And I like that. I'm going to stick with that one for the Ravens, the big crab cake. You know, they're playing at home. You know, they seem like they had everything going, but the Bengals, they answer the bell time and time again in that game. And part of it was A.J. Green. I mean, he had two touchdown receptions in the game, had a huge game. But Andy Dalton also looked good throwing the ball, did not make big mistakes. And that was something that we kind of hit on last week was, you know, would Andy Dalton be able to avoid the mistakes and step up in a big game? And that's exactly what Andy Dalton did. And Andy Dalton's play has been a huge reason why the Bengals are undefeated at this point. And to me, they're definitely one of the best teams in the AFC behind New England. I mean, obviously you could take almost any team in the NFL and put them behind New England, but the Bengals are definitely up there, and they're definitely a team to be reckoned with. And I think at this point, they're definitely the favorites to win at the AFC North, especially with what's been going on in Pittsburgh. And going on in Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Steelers played against the Rams on Sunday. They snuck by, winning 12-6, but in the process, they lost their franchise quarterback, Big Ben Roethlisberger, injured. He had an ankle injury, is supposed to be out now 4 to 6 weeks. And frankly, I think the Steelers are a little bit lucky that he's only going to be out that long, because it looked way worse. It looked like one of those, he's getting carted off the field, just looking in Roethlisberger's eyes. It just looked like, you know, he was a defeated guy. He almost looked like he was on the verge of crying and, you know, getting carted off the field. And you're thinking, oh boy, this is bad. He's out for the year. But 4 to 6 weeks, still not great news for the Steelers. Obviously, they have Le'Veon Bell back. He did not have a very good first week, however. But having Le'Veon Bell helps, and also Antonio Brown and their other weapons. And really, the Steelers' defense has looked pretty good to this point. I mean, they held the Rams to six a week ago, and really shut down the 49ers the week before that. And Ryan Shazier, I know he didn't play on Sunday, but he has looked fantastic in games that he has been in this thus far. He kind of had a slow start in his rookie year, but definitely seems to be coming into his own. Had a great preseason. He led the team in tackles in the preseason and really had been dominating in his two games. We'll see when he comes back for Pittsburgh, and they're headed on the road this week in a game we'll head on in our next segment, the Steelers and Ravens, one of the best rivalries in the NFL, and a game that has a lot of intrigue to it now, is not just because of the rivalry, but because of where the Ravens are and because who the Steelers will be playing at quarterback. Again, we'll be talking about that game a little bit later. And then in the other quarterback situation, the Dallas Cowboys had their first game without Tony Romo in the lineup. He's out with that collarbone injury. Brandon Whedon did not look too bad. Really pretty good. He only started off really great, completing his first, I think it was 12 passes. His first incomplete pass was actually an interception, and I think that play was crucial in that game. The Dallas was up by two possessions at that point in the game, and that interception kind of allowed the Falcons to get back into the game a little bit. And once they got close, that offense just exploded in the second half. Devontae Freeman had a huge game. You know, all of his fantasy owners were rejoicing. He had over 100 yards and 3 touchdowns. Julio Jones continued his quest of being the best receiver in the NFL, had another fantastic week, and is on pace to have over 2,000 yards receiving and some crazy amount of number of touchdowns. He's just been putting up Madden-like numbers so far, and you just look at him on the field. He's just such a physical presence. He's so big and so strong and so fast. I mean, everything about him, he's like a, you know, if somebody were to make a stereotypical football player and, you know, plug him into a video game, Julio Jones would be that guy, and he is really that good. You know, and I've been really impressed with the Falcons, and, you know, this game should not be all about, you know, the Tony Romo-less Cowboys. The Falcons should get some credit here. The Falcons looked very good. You know, that running game was running the ball well. The defense is definitely much improved under head coach Dan Quinn in his first year in Atlanta, and it just seems like a lot of the issues that Atlanta has had over the last couple of years are getting fixed. The defense is better. The running game is better. Matt Ryan is getting better protection. And this team, I think, is definitely poised to make a playoff run. And looking at that NFC South, I think it's Atlanta and the 2-time defending champion Panthers, who have also looked pretty good to this point. They snuck by the Saints, who were Josh McCownless, speaking of injured quarterbacks, excuse me, I've got my McCowns mixed up. McCown was starting. Drew Brees was actually the injured player, and it was Luke McCown making the start. Josh McCown, a quarterback on the Browns, of course. So a good weekend to be a McCown, I guess you should say. And kind of interesting, you know, interesting thing that's hit on. The Raiders finally won a game in the Eastern time zone. They hadn't done that in literally years, which kind of, since 2009, hadn't done that, which kind of points to how bad the Raiders had been. But, you know, the Raiders sitting at 2-1, playing the Bears this coming week, things maybe looking up a little bit in Oakland. And, you know, their young players are starting to step up, and some of those draft picks the Raiders have been making over the years has been working for them. And, you know, you see they hit on David Carr. They hit on the quarterback. They hit on Amari Cooper, the wide receiver, and Latavius Murray looks good this week coming out of the backfield at over 100 yards. And the defense looked pretty good as well. They recorded, I think it was 5 sacks in the game. And with Aldon Smith on that D-line with Khalil Mack, all of a sudden, Oakland's D-line is looking pretty good. And with Malcolm Smith, also a very good player in that front 7. And we'll have to see if that young secondary can hold up and if Charles Woodson can keep making big plays. Man, Charles Woodson is such an interesting and unbelievable football player. To me, he is absolutely, yes, a Hall of Famer. He's been a great player for his entire career. Heisman Trophy winner coming out of Michigan, has been nothing but a positive influence in the locker room. I mean, he had a bit of a rough start in Oakland the first time, but I think when it's all said and done, he should be retired. He should be put in the Hall of Fame just for his years in Green Bay. I mean, what he did in Green Bay, and I think he should retire as a Packer myself. I mean, he seems to like Oakland and really respect the fans in Oakland, but he had his best years in Green Bay. He had the Defensive Player of the Year award in Green Bay. He won a Super Bowl in Green Bay, and I think just, but that's not really a huge thing to be looking at right now. It's just a testament to how great this guy has been for so long and continues to do so right now. And looking at another Bay Area team, the 49ers, they just had a rough go of it this weekend against the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals put up 40 points. It seemed like it was over from the very beginning as Colin Kaepernick threw 2 straight pick sixes to start that one out for the Arizona Cardinals. And the Cardinals just never looked back. The Cardinals, to me, just kind of are picking up where they left off last year before Carson Palmer got injured. A lot of people kind of forgot about how good Arizona was last year until Palmer went down with the injury, and then they still made the playoffs with God knows who playing quarterback for them, but they definitely limped into the playoffs and were in no shape to be competing in the playoffs without a good serviceable quarterback. And Carson Palmer has been that, and he has been playing very well, and we've been seeing maybe a little bit of an invigoration of a couple guys' careers. Larry Fitzgerald has had two straight really solid games for the Cardinals, and Chris Johnson also had a really good game on Sunday, rushing for over 100 yards and a touchdown. I mean, both of them kind of turning back the clock a couple years to come up with really solid performances, and to me, this team is definitely the favorite in the NFC West at this point. Definitely not the Seahawks. I definitely like the way they've played. I think they're more of a complete team. The Seahawks definitely still have a few things to iron out on offense. Jimmy Graham definitely looked better on Sunday against the Bears, and I think that will be the Seahawks' most biggest and most important weapon, not Marshawn Lynch this season. I mean, Marshawn Lynch is definitely the tone setter for that team, but I feel like Jimmy Graham is more important. He's your downfield threat, where Doug Baldwin, Jermaine Kearse, Lockett, those are all serviceable wide receivers and good players, but they can't take the top off a defense like Jimmy Graham can, and he doesn't require people to match up against him like Jimmy Graham does, and he's just a tough defender to go up against and just a monster, frankly. And I think once the Seahawks really figure out how to use him, I think it'll be a tough go of it for the other teams in the NFC West. But that hasn't happened as of yet, and the Seahawks definitely are one of the more elite teams in the NFL at this point, and we still have a long way to go. Just ask Trent Dilfer. This is the 1 year anniversary of Trent Dilfer making that horrible comment last year on Monday Night Football, where he said after the Patriots started off the year, I think it was 1-3, he said the Patriots, let's just face it, quote, they're not that good anymore. Whoops, they just kind of went on to win the Super Bowl, but whoops, I guess we all get them wrong once in a while, huh? And hitting on some of the biggest news from around the NFL this afternoon, speaking of the Bears, I kind of were halfway talking about them a second ago and was talking about the Seahawks. The Bears have made a couple of trades. They have traded Jonathan Bostic, a linebacker, and defensive end Jared Allen. Both have been traded. Bostic traded to New England Patriots, and Jared Allen has been traded to Carolina. And both of those moves, definitely more about the scheme, I would think. The John Fox's scheme is now a 3-4, where last year, under Mark Trestman, the Bears ran a 4-3 defense, and both Bostic and Jared Allen are definitely at where they have played more in 4-3s in their careers. Obviously, Bostic, being drafted by the Bears, has definitely played more in the 4-3. But I always thought about Jared Allen and thought he could play in a 3-4, because at this point in his career, all he's going to do is get in a three-point stance and rush the passer. So why can't Jared Allen do that in a 3-4, just as an edge guy? Yep, I guess you got me there. But he's going to Carolina, a team that needs some pass rush help. They've really been kind of trying to replace Greg Hardy ever since he had that whole fiasco last season. Now he's in Dallas, and I definitely don't question the Panthers' motives for letting Greg Hardy walk, for all of the trouble he'd caused and the PR backlash that they could get from it, but that still leaves a big hole on their football team in rushing the passer, and I don't think Jared Allen is going to be Jared Allen of old or Jared Allen from Kansas City or Minnesota, but I definitely think Jared Allen is still a serviceable player, and he's got a lot of pride. You know, he's one of those guys that's not just going to keel over and not care. You know, he's going to go out there and he is going to play hard every down he is out there. You know, he is a ruthless football player. He is one of the more ruthless guys that you're going to come across. He, you know, he doesn't take anything from anybody. You know, this guy came from, you know, he started from humble beginnings, you know, was not a D1 college football player, you know, or a big prospect, but he proved it on the football field and has been one of the best pass rushers in the last 10 years, absolutely, for the Vikings, the Chiefs, the Bears, and now the Carolina Panthers. We'll have to see how that one goes. And in Deflategate news, the NFL has been granted an appeal by a federal court, but that appeal will not be heard until 2016, which they're saying will be probably after the regular season and postseason. So even if Tom Brady is suspended, he's not going to be suspended until next season, which would be 2016. So, seems kind of wild and far-fetched. I'm not really sure what the NFL has to gain here other than maybe some pride. You know, maybe if a federal court finds that Tom Brady actually was at fault the way the NFL thinks it does, maybe they'll be able to point the finger and say, ha, we were right the whole time. You know, maybe that is what it's all about, because they looked pretty darn bad in that whole Deflategate debacle, and I think that's the best word for it. It was just a debacle and totally unnecessary, and we'll see how that federal case plays out. And then the last bit of NFL news, thought this was kind of interesting. Golden Tate, a wide receiver from the Detroit Lions, claimed on the radio today in local radio affiliate Detroit, claimed that after every game, at least one player has come up to him and said that they knew what was coming, that they're able to read their signs, they're not sure what they're showing in pre-snap, but put it simply, it's like the defense is in the mind of the offensive coordinator, and they know what plays are getting called and what they're going to run. And I just thought that was kind of odd. I mean, obviously, you probably can read some things with opposing offenses, but you wouldn't think that they'd be able to just call out what you're about to run. It seems kind of crazy. It's like, yeah, you're going to run one off left tackle. Like, oh, wow. It's kind of just surprising, I thought. And definitely the Lions are going to have to make some adjustments, and because they're not exactly in for the easiest matchup next week, as they were not able to get it done this past week against the Denver Broncos. And now at 0-3, the Lions are headed to Seattle in the 12th man, and that's not going to be an easy test. And on Monday Night Football to top it off, so that's going to make it even a little bit tougher for the Lions. All right, we are going to be headed for our first break. When we come back, we are going to break down some of Week 4 matchups from around the NFL. And after that, we're going to get into some college football talk. You are listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We'll be right back.
Scrape off the old wax ring. Place the new wax ring over the flange, then line up the bolts with the bowl and gently set in place, making sure a proper seal is created with the flange and drain. Next?
Dad?
Yeah, sweetie?
Is that an old plumbing manual?
Oh, yeah, honey.
We really need to get some new books.
Right, do you want me to stop?
Nah, I kind of want to know how it ends.
Okay. Tighten the bolts, line up the flushing valve to the opening in the top of the bowl, and secure the tank with a screwdriver and crescent wrench.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are 4 times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side, volunteer to read to children, make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day, and the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor or mentor, give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, coming to you live from studio. We just wrapped up some week 3 recaps from the National Football League and some of the news and notes going on around the league. Talked about the fire sales made in the trade market by the Bears and quarterback issues going on with a couple teams. And now we're going to be headed into some week 4 predictions and outlooks for what's coming for week 4 from around the NFL. We're going to start with the game coming in 2 days on Thursday night. The rivalry between the Steelers and the Ravens will be renewed at the Big Crab Cake, M&T Bank Stadium over there in Baltimore. And this is a very interesting game because you look at the Ravens, they've started off 0-3 and are in panic mode for sure. They definitely don't want to fall to 0-4, especially not that in that division. And you look at the Steelers, they're going to be looking at, they need every win that they can get at this point as well with Big Ben playing on the bench. Michael Vick is going to be getting the start for the Steelers. And Michael Vick, obviously, a lot of people know who he is. He was a big star in the NFL for many years, had that big, I guess you would say it's a scandal with the whole jail time he had to serve for the dog fighting ring that he was a part of, and that will probably always put a dark shadow over his entire career. But, you know, he's been a solid player, and you got to wonder what he has left in the tank at this point in his career. A lot of people think that this might be Michael Vick's last starting stint in the NFL, and I would have to tend to agree. At this point in his career, he's in his 30s. Definitely getting up there, probably not too many years left in Michael Vick. This may be even his last season. You never know, but, you know, Michael Vick, if he's still got some athleticism left in those legs, he might be able to service the Steelers well. You know, they are a team that likes to run the football, and maybe Chad Haley will dial up some zone read option plays and get him going with Le'Veon Bell. You never know. I mean, get that running game going. Maybe they'll just completely change their offensive scheme with Vic in there, and I definitely think they need to make some adjustments with that. One thing Michael Vick does have is a big arm, so I do expect them to attack downfield, go deep a lot, because Michael Vick can really throw it a long way. You know, he's not the most accurate passer in the intermediate game, but he can throw the deep ball, and that was definitely one of his best attributes when he was a starter in this league. So we'll have to see what he can do against the Ravens defense. And the Ravens have didn't, and the Ravens need to get on track quickly if they want to still think about the playoffs. And I talked a little bit about the Raiders and their matchup this week against the Bears, and one thing I just thought was interesting is the Raiders are going on the road this week to play the Bears at Soldier Field, but the Raiders are favored in that one. And my thought was, is when was the last time the Raiders were favored playing in a game on the road? Man, that, somebody would have probably have to go back a long way to find the answer to that. And I mean, and it's, you know, but you look at it, heck, the Raiders, they're favored. They should win this one against the Bears. The Bears have looked absolutely awful. I mean, the morale can't be too high after the trades have been made. It's almost like they're kind of throwing in the towel after a couple of weeks. But fact of the matter is the Raiders have a legit shot to get to 3-1. And I think that would be great for that franchise, you know, create a little bit of excitement, you know. And for a franchise that's been so down for so long but has such a proud history and, you know, a fan base that's just itching to get back, you know, to the elite, get back to the playoffs and erase some of these old memories that have been just stuck in Raiders' mind. I mean, going back to the Tuck Rule game and the Super Bowl when they were just crushed by John Gruden and the Buccaneers. And I mean, some of the guys that played in those game in that game are already in the Hall of Fame, which goes to show how long it's been for the Raiders and them trying to get back. But they definitely seem to be on the right track. And looking at a team that's kind of going in the positive direction as well, the Bengals, who I met on, they have a chance to get to 4-0. They'll clash against the Chiefs this week. And the Chiefs, they didn't look too bad last night on Monday Night Football. You know, their offense kind of got into gear a little bit in the second half of that one, but too little too late against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers as their offense just continued to roll at Lambeau last night. And, you know, Rodgers' interception streak kept going, and Rodgers just adds to his ever-growing resume at Lambeau Field as a quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. Bengals, I definitely think, should be favored in this matchup to go to 4-0, and especially playing at home with all the fans on their side. They'll be able to, you know, maybe run the ball a little bit against the Chiefs, maybe get some big plays with A.J. Green. The Chiefs are a little bit beat up in the secondary, and Aaron Rodgers exposed that beat-up secondary, so I'd imagine Andy Dalton and the Bengals will probably try to do the same thing, maybe try to get to A.J. Green or Sanu. And Tyler Eifert has also played pretty good this season as well for the Bengals. We'll see if he can stay healthy and stay on the field for the Cincinnati Bengals. Another game, a late game, I'd like to hit on. The Green Bay Packers, who I just mentioned, are headed out to Levi's Stadium, out to Santa Clara, to play against the local San Francisco 49ers, who, after winning in their first game and really looked pretty good in week one against the Vikings, it's been a totally different story the last 2 weeks, as they have just looked awful the last 2 weeks, really on offense and defenses. They've just gotten blown out the last 2 weeks, and it's definitely not going to get any easier, even though they're at home playing against maybe the best team in the NFC, the Green Bay Packers. And the one thing I think the 49ers are going to have to look for is improved quarterback play from Colin Kaepernick. Last week was just not a great week for Kaepernick, and he really hasn't had all that great of a start to the season either. He had the lowest QBR of any quarterback in the league last week, and there seems to be a little bit of a rising anti-Colin Kaepernick kind of crowd starting to rise up, and it's starting to get bigger. Frankly, I'll be honest, I thought Colin Kaepernick was not the right choice to be the starting quarterback from the beginning with this team. Alex Smith was playing well in the offense. Alex Smith is, you know, the ultimate game manager. He's not going to make a mistake, but he can make big throws when you need him to, and he can lead your team down the field when you need him to make big plays. And instead, they decided to go with a little bit of a trendy pick in the Kaepernick, and I understand he got the 49ers to a lot of big games, but how much of that was actually on Kaepernick and on the defense? And, you know, the 49ers had such great defenses. They had the best defense almost in football, right up there with Seattle when you go back to that 2013 NFC title game and how it's just been an unraveling since then for the franchise. And I think Colin Kaepernick is part of the reason why. You know, in a situation last year when they had some injuries on the defense and the defense wasn't playing at his best, it needed its quarterback to step up and kind of pick up the slack. But Colin Kaepernick was unable to do so, and the 49ers finished at a disappointing 8-8. Now, this year, Colin Kaepernick definitely in a position where he needs to step up, hasn't done so, and I don't think he will either in week four, and I think the 49ers will fall to 1-3 at home to the Packers. And let's not forget, the Packers are going to be very motivated to play against the 49ers, as 49ers the last, you know, previous years had beaten the Packers in a couple of playoff games and also some regular season games as well. So 49ers kind of a similar rival to what the Seahawks have been for the Packers as well. So the Green Bay will definitely be ready to take it to the 49ers this week, and I definitely think that they will. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they win by over double digits. And don't be surprised either if Colin Kaepernick struggles to start hearing some of the boo birds come out in Santa Clara and maybe even start clamoring for Blaine Gabbert, which seems a little bit maybe far-fetched at this point. But if Kaepernick has a week this week like he did last week, it's definitely going to get ugly in the South Bay, and that quarterback controversy may be for real. And, you know, and you got to think, if the 49ers do struggle for the rest of this year, I definitely think they would be in the market for a quarterback, don't you? Maybe not Cardale Jones, but maybe some of the other quarterbacks. This is a very heavy quarterback draft, so we're definitely going to have to keep our eyes peeled for that. All right, so that's what I'm looking forward to in week five. A couple of other interesting matchups, the Saints and the Cowboys. That should be an interesting one in New Orleans. And also the Minnesota Vikings going on the road to play Denver. That should also be a great matchup as well. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to get into our college football talk. You are listening to Chalk Talk on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We'll be right back, right after this quick break.
New mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa. Now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent.
Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
Don't tell Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Oh.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We like to welcome all of our listeners who are listening to the Dominican soccer game. The women's and men's team were in action this afternoon. Frankie Luongo and Joaquin were over at the soccer field broadcasting that one for you. So I'm sure they did a very good job. You're listening now to Chalk Talk. Coming up next on Penguin Radio, after me at 5 o'clock, will be Uncovered with DJ Soundwave. She will be talking about some YouTube cover artists. Make sure you listen to her show. Trust me, she works extremely hard to get that show ready for you guys. And it is a very interesting show topic, so make sure you tune in for that. We just wrapped up our Week 4 predictions and outlook for the NFL. And now we'll be moving into our Week 4 recap of college football. To remember the confusion, college football started a week before the NFL, so they are a week ahead of the NFL. So when I say Week 4 recap and Week 4 look ahead for the NFL, don't get yourself confused. Anyway, so looking at Week 4 for college football, TCU. Wow, what a game that was, with the Texas Tech Red Raiders went back and forth, featured Texas Tech quarterback. I see me playing on one leg, kind of reminded me of Byron Leftwich, a little bit at Marshall, not quite to that extent. With if you remember that game when Brandon Leftwich was at Marshall, there was a game where his ankle was so injured that he literally pretty much couldn't even walk, but the Marshall was on like a final drive to win the game, and you know, when they were in the hurry up offense, and Marshall's lineman literally carried him to every play, and it was just kind of a never seen anything like it. Obviously the Texas Tech quarterback wasn't quite like that, but you know, but he was definitely hurting. And TCU gets the win on a crazy deflection play on fourth down. And you know, there's some interesting videos. I saw one video of a reaction where it was a TCU fraternity, like watch party. There's probably 50, 75 guys all sitting in this room with a big screen TV, you know, watching this game. And just the, you know, it's one of those classic reactions where the whole place just goes nuts. You know, all these, you know, you can imagine what a bunch of fraternity guys would do in Texas, you know, just a lot of testosterone and probably some, you know, probably a bunch of beers were drank and shots were taken. I mean, you know, you guys went to college, you get the idea. And it should be, you know, TCU, you know, they looked very good. Their offense looked good. Boykin, the quarterback, was fantastic. I mean, he was whipping the ball all over the field and was outstanding. But I don't know if I'm completely sold on TCU as a playoff contender. That defense definitely scared me and definitely is not even close to as good as how good TCU's defense was a year ago. And they're definitely going to need to make some adjustments and get ready, because they still have the biggest games left on their Big 12 slate. That was kind of a warm-up, if you will, for some of the bigger matchups they'll be facing later this year. And another team that really escaped this week was the Florida Gators. They were down 14 in the fourth quarter to Tennessee, and Tennessee sees another lead slip away as they saw them do the same thing against Oklahoma a couple weeks ago. They pull a similar rabbit out of the hat against Florida this week. Florida, with the win, gets back into the top 25 rankings and gains some momentum going into a huge weekend, into a huge matchup on Saturday against Ole Miss in the Swamp once again. And the Gators, you know, they definitely look to have some young, talented players on the outside on offense. The redshirt freshman quarterback seems to be serviceable at this point. he will definitely continue to improve. And the Florida defense looks pretty good. So Ole Miss is definitely in for a test on Saturday in the Swamp and in prime time at night. Definitely not an easy place to play. I would definitely put it in the top 10 hardest road environments in the country, and that'll be an interesting one to look at, and we'll do more in our last segment coming up when we look ahead to week 5 for college football. And the speaking of another and the third really crazy matchup, really crazy finish of the week had to come from Austin once again. And for the second straight week, special teams dooms the Texas Longhorns. We saw it 2 weeks ago with Cal as they were unable to make a PAT to tie that game up that would have sent it to overtime. And this week against Oklahoma State, they were in a similar position, and this time they were punting the ball away, and the punter deep in Texas territory just straight dropped the snap. It was a perfect snap, went right to him, and he just dropped the ball. And I think he saw the rush coming at him, and Oklahoma State, to their credit, they were bringing it. There was four or five guys coming right after the punter, and I think he just panicked a little bit and dropped the football, and then all hell broke loose for Texas. And Oklahoma State sneaks by. They get a win on a game-winning field goal as time started ticking away. And, man, for the second straight week at home, just ripping the heart out of the Longhorns. And you really have to feel for Charlie Strong at this point. I mean, it's just been a tough season to this thus far. I mean, you look at how they started at Notre Dame, just getting creamed. Their defense looked absolutely awful, and their offense looked probably just as bad. But, you know, the last 2 weeks, they've played two ranked opponents. I know Cal wasn't ranked at the time, but they are ranked now in this week's poll, and against a ranked Oklahoma State team as well, you know, competing. And frankly, Texas probably should have won both of those games. I mean, looking at the Cal game, Texas had a huge comeback. They had fought back into the game, and they were headed to overtime with all of the momentum, and then they let all the air out of the balloon. And the game last week with Oklahoma State's offense was on the ropes. The quarterback wasn't playing well, wasn't completing passes. And the only reason Oklahoma State got to tie the game was because a couple of odd penalties, including one on Coach Strong himself, a personal foul for yelling at the ref, set him up for a field goal to tie the game up. I mean, man, if you're a Texas fan, you just got to be shaking your head about the last 2 weeks, and I can't put too much of it on Charlie Strong. I mean, yeah, he made that mistake, and he should never have started running his mouth with officials enough for him to get flagged for a personal foul, but still, I mean, this team has been competing and has been right there on the doorstep. And to me, with this Texas team, that's the hope. You know, they need to keep competing and, you know, pick up some big wins in the conference and, you know, just start to gain some confidence. You know, this is a program that is in rebuilding mode. They're trying to get back to where they once were. They're trying to get back to the glory days of Colt McCoy and Vince Young and Major Applewhite and all of the great players that have played at Texas and the national championships and the conference championships. And it just seems weird not having Texas in all of these conversations. And Texas is searching, and I think that eventually they will find the method for getting back there. Hurd, I think, is a very promising player, their quarterback, extremely athletic, good football player, and definitely something to build on for the Longhorns. And we kind of, last week in our show, we kind of highlighted the big matchups going on in the Pac-12 this previous week, and those three matchups were kind of shadowed by beatdowns by all three of the road teams. Those three games, the Utah Utes just destroyed the Oregon Ducks on Saturday night. The USC Trojans crushed the Sun Devils, and the Arizona Wildcats got thumped by the UCLA Bruins. Kind of three big statement wins there in the Pac-12. And the road teams in those three games outscored the home team 160-64. So you can see the domination. Absolutely the biggest surprise has to be what went on at Autzen Stadium, where the Ducks just got thumped. And it was on both sides of the football. It was offense and defense. Obviously, I think the defense was the biggest thing you have to point the finger at. And it's been the biggest issue for the Ducks to this point in the year. Let's not forget they gave up over 40 points to Eastern Washington, a Division II team, in the first week. And gave up over 60 at home, the biggest home loss at Autzen since 1977. I mean, just everything about it was just wow. And frankly, I don't think the Ducks were ready for this game at all. They just looked extremely flat. Their offense was not executing. They're getting beat up front at the line of scrimmage. And defensively, it was just like a jailbreak up front. I think this team was a little bit shell-shocked. They were expecting to just have another fun night at Autzen, with Autzen going crazy, and Utah had other ideas, and they just came into Autzen and hit the Ducks in the mouth. There is no other way to describe it. And I just don't know what the heck the Ducks were doing in the game. It's like they weren't even ready to play. And, they obviously will be licking their wounds a little bit now. And the first time out of the top 25 since 2009, kind of a tough week for Ducks fans, but will definitely be a team that I think will continue to get better as the year goes on. I mean, you just look with all the weapons they still have on offense. They still have Braylon Addison and Dylan Stanford and Royce Freeman and a solid offensive line. So I definitely think this is a team that can bounce back, and we have seen the Ducks bounce back after tough losses in years past, so we'll have to see what happens there. Story with USC and ASU, I think it's more about ASU being overrated to start this season than it is USC maybe being an elite team. I know they're ranked 6th to coming into this season, USC, but they did have that bad loss 2 weeks ago to Stanford, and I'm still definitely not convinced that this team is an elite football team. And I just think it's more about Arizona State being overrated. They are ranked in the top 15 to start the season. They got thumped. They got thumped by Texas A&M to start the year. They picked up a couple of wins against two cupcake teams, but when they are up against another ranked team, they got thumped a second time. So, two games against two ranked teams and two poor performances for the Sun Devils, I think, tells all the story about what their team is going to be and where they are at this point in time. Can they improve? Sure, I think they definitely can improve, and they'll have some games to prove that they are better than what they've looked in the Pac-12, and we'll have to see if they can turn their season around, and they do have the players to do it. Berkovici, a veteran quarterback, definitely has the athletic ability to make some plays. He did not look good on Saturday. They had some really huge turnovers in the first half of that one that kind of allowed USC to really pull away in that one. And then the big surprise also was Arizona getting just thumped at home. They had College Game Day there. People kind of expected it to be a tough game, but when Solomon went down, it was just all downhill from there for the Wildcats, and their offense just was not as good without Solomon in there at quarterback, and they're in some trouble now this week as they're headed to the farm to play Stanford on the road. Should be a tough matchup for them. We'll go ahead and start to look ahead to week 5 now as as week four is now in the books for college football. We have a little bit of an idea of who some of the players will be in the Pac-12 and some of the other conferences as well, but there is still a long way to go and still a lot of crazy upsets and unpredictable events that will be happening on the way to the college football playoff. But looking ahead to week five, some of the biggest matchup, Ole Miss, you mentioned, headed into the Swamp. Should be a very tough game. Obviously, the Rebels were able to pick up one big win on the road 2 weeks ago up in Alabama. But this is a different animal playing against the Gators. It's maybe even a little bit of a tougher road environment. I mean, I know they're both extremely tough, but I think it's more about just the intimidation of playing Alabama than it is the crowd, where when you're playing Florida, it's about the crowd. It's the Swamp. You know, it's a loud place, and it's a nut bin. It's not an easy place to go for any team, especially not in prime time at night when the crowd gets plenty of time to get tuned up at all the tailgates before the game. It's not going to be easy, but if there's any team that can do it, it's Kelly and this Ole Miss team, and they're going to have to really do well on offense to compete. But I think the biggest thing to look at in this game will be, is Florida's offense going to be able to stick with Ole Miss? Are they going to be able to score enough points to stick with the Rebels? And I think that's something definitely to look at. You know, Florida got a couple of touchdowns late to win that game last week against Tennessee, but for the majority of the afternoon, Florida's offense was pretty darn quiet. They had the first drive of the game go for a touchdown, and then after that, it was just nothing for the longest time. For the rest of the first half and for a decent portion of the second half as well, Florida's offense was just kept quiet, and that's something I definitely think people should be looking for, is how good will Florida's offense be able to do. And I think they'll definitely focus on running the football and getting the ball to some of their skill players on the outside. And I think that's where they should be looking to do some damage. And looking at another big SEC matchup, the Alabama Crimson Tide headed between the hedges, headed to Georgia to play against the Bulldogs. And the Bulldogs are actually favored to win that game. Mark Richt kind of downplayed that, and as he should. I mean, at this point, you don't want to say anything politically incorrect, especially not to the media. Don't give in Alabama anything to fight with. But definitely an interesting game. It's going to be one of those matchups you don't really know what to expect. I mean, I definitely think the Bulldogs should be favored, and they are a very good-looking team. Chubbs looks like one of the best running backs in the nation, and they've got a defense that's playing very good. Malcolm Mitchell has also been very good on the outside for the Bulldogs, playing in front of their home fans. I think this is a game that they should win, and Alabama's offense is definitely going to have to step up to hang with the Bulldogs in this one. They expect a lot of Coker, maybe get the running game going with Henry. It's going to be definitely a tough test for the Tide, but if the Tide wants to stay in the hunt for the playoff, they're going to have to win this one. And, you know, and Georgia, they probably, if they win this one, it'll definitely put them in a first track to the playoffs. So definitely both teams have a lot to play for, and there will be a lot to look forward to this week in college football. The number one team, Ohio State, going on the road this week as well. They're headed to Indiana to play the Hoosiers. And one game that I think to look for an upset, I mentioned them, the Oregon Ducks. They got slammed last week. Look out, they're headed to Colorado this week. Colorado, they're 3-1. So, you know, definitely a program trying to get back on track. A win against a team like Oregon would definitely be big. I'm not saying I think they will win, but it's definitely an interesting thing to look at. All right, we are out of time. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in this afternoon. You have been listening to Chalk Talk here on radio.dominican.edu. Coming up next, will be Uncovered with DJ Soundwave. We'll be right back here with you next week from 4 to 5 p.m. Until then, signing off, this is Jeff Safford. Have a great afternoon, everybody, and stay tuned for Uncovered. See ya.